Guasó, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast. And man, we're getting up there. Episode 197, trickling towards 200. Fittingly enough for the Whitecaps, there's a homestand coming up. So maybe we'll hit that 200 over the next few weeks. And I think that's perfect timing because obviously we got a big couple of weeks ahead for both of us as co-hosts. Of course, for those unfamiliar, I'm your co-host, Alexander Gagaruzic, joined as always by Sam Yaron. And for the first time in a while, we're in the same time zone. And hey, with episode 200 coming up, maybe we're going to have to do some sort of in-person special to mark the occasion with Sam making a visit out here on the beautiful West Coast, just in time for a long Whitecaps homestand. Couldn't time it any better with the team being in pretty darn good form. Of course, you got some CPL starting too out here on the West Coast. Vancouver FC and Pacific FC dropping some fire kits, which we're actually gonna have to talk about. Like we have to, like those kits are both phenomenal and have broken the internet in different ways. Of course, some big signings from both of those teams, and just overall a good start to the beat. You know, this is the soccer season, I guess you can say, in BC, be it MLS or CPL, and of course League One BC creeping along. But before we dive into everything this show, starting with the Whitecaps strong start, Sam, how's it like to be back on the beautiful West Coast?
Yeah, doing very well, enjoying, you know, made the trip across the country successfully without any lost bags or any shenanigans, any delays, things like that. So shout out to the Canadian Airlines for doing a decent job there. And yeah, very happy to be sitting here in BC. Looking forward to the Vancouver Whitecaps this weekend at home against RSL. Obviously, Alex, we have a second consecutive road win to talk about, which after a bit of a sluggish start against Charlotte, people a little anxious out of the gates. How is this team going to look? They've answered a lot of questions these last two road matches. So now they get to take what they've learned, what they've developed, what they've cultivated as a group and tested at home against, I think, a sputtering but a dangerous RSL team. International absences obviously playing into the mix here as MLS plays over these breaks. But we're going to talk a little bit about how things went down against FC Dallas, dive into what to expect for RSL this weekend. As you mentioned, a little kit talk on the back end as well. And just news and notes, as always, from around the week in MLS. So as always, looking forward to getting into it.
Yeah, for sure. It should be a big episode. And let's not waste any time and dive into this Whitecaps hot start because, man, there's been some fantastic numbers going around. I think the big one is if the Whitecaps win, this ends up being one of, if not the best, four start. Actually, yeah, if they win this weekend against RSL, it's their best four game start to an MLS season. The road form is a big one because the big stat that I loved is the Whitecaps won their second road game of the year. Last year, it took them till August 27th, I think it was, for them to win two road games in MLS. August 27th, we are mid-March, just to give context on how special it is that the Whitecaps have won two road games already, let alone two consecutive road games, because that didn't come for the Whitecaps, I think, until late August, early September, when they went on that road run of seven games and got a couple wins off the board there. And yeah, I think what's the big surprise isn't that just that they're going out and winning road games, but they're looking relatively good while doing so, if you can say that, like, especially on the road in MLS, like San Jose, we talked a lot about, okay, maybe there's some areas to clean up, but at the end, they got a 2-0 win. They were relatively comfortable, nothing to, you know, write home about. You get your 3 points, but in this game against Dallas, to win 3-1, score the goal they did for the first one, like, it was front to back. There was like 10 passes. Matias Laborda was back heeling guys. Brian White with the cutback. Ryan Gall dummy. Laborda finish, like just absurdly nice soccer too. And then they get a 3-1 lead at half and it was just shut it down. No nonsense. Okay, maybe they got a bit of help from Petar Musa, who decided the wrong day to to not bring his shooting boots, which is always tough when you pay a lot of money for a striker like that, as Dallas did. But even then, even if he'd scored one of those goals, look, the Whitecaps had built the lead with their goals based on how they're defending. You'd back them defending a 3-2 right now. And look, the numbers spoke for themselves. Despite some decent chances from Dallas, I think the XG barely got over 1.1 or something, I think it was. And I think now the Whitecaps, through three games, they're top five in MLS in XG against, which is just, again, absurd to say out loud. And that's per game, by the way, because the Whitecaps have played less than the others. So, yeah, overall, like, just there's a lot of, you know, good positivity, I guess, around this start, which is maybe not what we've been used to seeing over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on so many good points. I think the liquid football, the, you know, Laborda and White back and forth for the opening goal. I think something I was, you know, everyone wanted to see Fafa Pico, right, after the first two matches. But I think what was really impressive was not just the way Fafa stretched the field and stressed Dallas defensively, but the way he demonstrated he's not just a pace merchant, right? Like, hits in a beautiful cross for that Brian White goal, makes a great run, you know, scores the header on the third Whitecaps goal. Like, it was a complete performance from him, which is fantastic to see. Gives Vanni Sartini and co. certainly something to think about, obviously not for this match because Fafa is away with Haiti, but down the road for what the Whitecaps could do in attack. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just kind of going through the squad, Pedro Vite and Andres Cubas were very strong in this match. You know, really a big part of, I think, kind of the way the Whitecaps were able to tweak the front three a little bit, just open things up, gave Pedro and Andres the opportunity to spring them in transition to, you know, kind of move, marshal things through the midfield efficiently. And it was just, yeah, it was free flowing in that first half. And you saw a very similar looking Whitecaps squad to when everything was going right offensively last season in that first half, right? It's like, man, when these guys get out in transition, they have some space on the ball, they can be very dangerous and dynamic. It's just trying to win that tactical battle enough to put yourself in those positions, because Vancouver has the quality to score a lot of goals, but they, you know, you got to try to avoid ending up in a scenario like Charlotte on opening day, where you never find yourselves in those dangerous moments. So they've done a really nice job over the last two matches. And as you pointed out, you know, it took them so long last season to figure out the formula on the road, and they're already off to a really good start in 2024.
Yeah, and I think what's the big thing is there's so much room for upside. I think that's what's, you know, encouraging, that like it still feels like this Whitecaps team has another gear to hit. I mean, first off, there's the fact that we've yet seen Ali Ahmed start, that Sam Adekugbe, you know, is of course yet to see the field. Those are two key pieces that, you know, are going to be very big parts of this team. I think that's huge. I think, of course, you know, there's still a lot of room to improve this squad with the signings, but that's a whole other story, you know, down the road. And yeah, I think in terms of the numbers, I think I mentioned the defense being great, but the attack's been actually so-so. I think the attack has been so-so in the sense that numbers, they're not actually generating that many chances in terms of the XG, which has dipped a fair amount. But as we're seeing by the eye test, they're generating a lot, the sort of high percentage looks that they like, right? Like, they got guys like, that's something like Brian White led the league last year in headed goals. Headed goals don't always rate the highest on XG, yet you see it in this game where they were able to capitalize on Dallas's defensive line with some great crosses into the box. And, you know, that's something where maybe you score a few more goals in your XG when you're hitting all your crosses with two headers and the other one being a foot, a ground cross. But I still feel like this attack has another level to hit, because Ryan Gault, no goals, no assists yet. He's been very good. He's been working very hard off the ball, but it feels like in terms of his final delivery, he has another level to hit in terms of, you know, some of the decisions, some of the final passes, final shots. And that's scary because, you know what he can do. And I think, yeah, that's the biggest theme with this team to start the year, that they just seem to be getting a bit more of a team buy-in, if that makes sense, like a team effort. Because it felt like last year, not to say they weren't, but if it makes sense, they would win basically as far as Ryan Gauld could take them, and Brian White to that extent, and then as well at the beginning of the year, as far as Julian Gressel can take them, whereas it feels like through these first three games, that there's not the same dependence on a Ryan Gauld as much there, or a Brian White, that it could be a Pico stepping up. It could be Laborda having some big games at the back. It could be Vite Kubas shutting things down in the middle. And I think one big area, a big reason for that has to be the defense, because, you know, maybe it's because I was reading a book lately. They're saying something along the lines of course, it matters if you score a lot of goals, because teams who score a lot of goals typically do well. It also matters to keep a lot of clean sheets, because if you keep clean sheets, you're guaranteed points every game, right? While they also, it's also been said that when balancing it out, defensive increments are slightly worth more than goals, because ideally you score a lot of goals, you don't concede many. If you do that, you're Manchester City, you're running away with the league. But if you're going to look at incremental increases, being good defensively and decent offensively can be worth more than being very great offensively and not so good defensively. Because we saw that at times with the Whitecaps last year, the other side of the coin. And I think it feels like that defense has given them a new floor, because through these three games, they've been very good defensively. They've conceded two goals across three games. And thanks to that, they have 7 points, like, because their offense is doing enough. And I think that's good, because their offense still has another gear to click. Gauld can find his feet, etc. So I think that's been a big encouragement for me as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at the Dallas match, and it's a, you know, it's getting caught napping a little bit on a set piece. It's not a fundamental breakdown from open play. Now, obviously, given the fact that the Whitecaps had some concerns last season on set pieces, that's something you want to button up. But it feels, at least like to this point, you know, small sample size, three matches, but the Whitecaps seem to have made that incremental defensive gain, or they're certainly on track to do so. So as we kind of pointed out in our preview content going into the season, if they can maintain the offensive output or even regress slightly, but find some improvements on the defensive side of the ball, there's real potential to move up the table there. So, you know, I mean, I'll heap some praise on Ranko Veselinovic and Tristan Blackman again at the back, who are very solid. Again, I kind of mentioned the midfield duo, who I thought were very strong against FC Dallas, but also we should give a shout out to, you know, it might be a little bit unconventional, but Alessandro Schopp out in that wide role. He's being given a little bit more time on the ball, a little bit more room to roam and to cut inside when he wants to. And he just, you know, it wasn't necessarily an exceptional match from Schopp, but he looked very comfortable in that spot, and they seem to have found something that works, at least in the interim. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, Sam Adekubi sounds like he's ready to play some minutes this weekend at home against RSL, which is, I mean, first off, just very exciting to see Sam back in the fold, and, you know, really wishing him well and hoping that he can stay healthy. All the talk from the Whitecaps has been that, you know, they only really want to have Sam back when they feel he can be a real impact contributor. So that's is part of why they've been so cautious throughout this process. But it's one of those things where if Sam can't go every weekend, then maybe someone like Schopp has an underrated role to play as a depth piece. So, you know, I Vanni Sartini once again making everyone a fullback wingback type. On the other side of the pitch as well, you know, across from Schopp, I thought a second solid match from Ryan Raposo. He obviously hits in a nice cross that leads to a goal contribution there. I did think that Matias Laborda and Raposo a little bit, they had some adventures down that. It's their defensive right-hand side of the pitch, so it was Dallas attacking down the left. There was, you know, there were moments there early in the second half where Dallas was finding some space, whipping in crosses, and having a little bit of joy. That was maybe the one area defensively where the Whitecaps, from open play at least, had a little bit of trouble in that match. But even so, it was like Raposo and Laborda recovered pretty well. And shout out to our Caleb Wilkins, who I think wrote this well in the post-match, that, you know, the Whitecaps seem to have decided that they're going to be happy to concede these kind of low XG crosses. And if that's, they're going to be the one weakness of their defense, that they're going to manage that, but they're ultimately going to, you know, prevent the really dangerous kind of chances that other teams want to create. And it seems like they've done that effectively so far, even without their top two choice fullback wingback types out there in Ahmed and Adekubi.
Yeah, and I think what's nice too with the Laborda errors, they were definitely like a few of that on that side, is that they're very, very correctable. Because I think Laborda, again, he also had a very strong game in his 1v1 defending, and that continues to be his big strength. Like anytime he was lined up 1v1, he was fine, even more than fine. He was great. I think, again, there were a few errors. The one that I noticed was the play Dallas start to hit a few times in the second half was the Whitecaps would – Laborda would tuck in a bit too much almost in the three, and then it would be – the ball would be on Dallas's right. And then the white or the Dallas would hit a switch. Laborda would be try aggressively to win the ball and then put him out of position. Whereas in that case, you'd almost wonder, okay, you're a bit drawn in. You're better just not trying to win the ball and immediately go into a recover position, because then you know 1v1 that you can trust yourself. I think those are maybe just little moments of, you know, you sometimes your instinct as a center back. So when you see a ball coming up to you like that, you try to win it. Whereas we've seen with Vanny's system and from what he's explained of it, sometimes, you know, a lot of what makes a zone work so well is when you know those moments when to be aggressive. Like for the Whitecaps, those moments are pressing from the front three. It's when the team makes a certain pass to their fullback and you can get that step in with the wing back. But sometimes when a team like switches play and they're, you know, they obviously try to overload the other side, you don't want to get too aggressive, right? You want to know when to drop off and then try to corner them out wide. I think those are still little moments where, you know, Laborda is getting used to maybe some of those aspects of, you know, the defensive system. But as we've seen, right, like that's the where a zone defense can be at its best, because you're really trying to nullify space and limit it. And I think we've seen Laborda do a great job when the ball's on the ground facing him as well. So I think that the fact is, yeah, if that's your lone defensive worry, that Laborda is being a bit too aggressive on switch balls, that, okay, maybe on set pieces, the Whitecaps will need to, you know, just be a bit wary of, you know, that sort of ball that Dallas delivered on their goal, where they just seem to catch a bunch of players flat footed and, you know, kind of out of their zone. Like they kind of, you know, got them a bit befuzzled in that way. I think those are little details to clean up. But I think, again, if those are the things that you're looking at, it's not like fundamentally like, oh, why are we dropping unmarked headers in our sick on our penalty spot all the time? Why are these clear shots? Like you take that, right? So I think that's the fact that you're looking at little things like that. You're looking at, okay, maybe offensively some of the decisions. Heck, it feels like on set pieces, the Whitecaps would still be a bit more dangerous than they've been at times. Like if those are the sort of little tweaks that you're looking at, like you'll take that, because it does feel like there's room to improve at the moment. And yeah, I think it's big that aerially they've cleaned things up to start the year, because yeah, I mean, of course they allow a goal aerially, but like you mentioned, it just felt like more of a, like it wasn't something where there was five or six breakdowns. It was one breakdown. Look, you defend a zone, it's tough. Like you're always going to have breakdowns if you defend zone to man, but the question is, can you limit them? And that's what really hurt the Whitecaps last year, that they'd have these games where it'd be five, six, seven, they'd concede two, three, four goals. Whereas, you know, if it's one mistake, one goal, that happens. Vanny said it as much. He's like, luckily it's football. We can't always, you know, not if we were conceding zero goals in a season, like that's just, no one does that. And, you know, as long as they can continue to clean things up.
Well, so my one question for you about the goal is, maybe this is too like old school of an approach to goalkeeping, but my thought is that anytime a ball is floated at the edge of your 6-yard box, that has to be the keeper's ball. I would, you know, I understand that Yohei Takaoka is not that kind of keeper necessarily. He wants to stay on his line more so and deal with the play from there, but just especially when it's lofted like that, I feel like that's one you just love your keeper to either come and knuckle away, you know, and get that out of the area, or just come and claim it. But I don't know if that's too of like an old school approach to goalkeeping. I'm curious for your thoughts on that one.
Yeah, it's a good question, because I mean, ultimately, Leggett gets the header right on the edge of the six. Like, it was a great ball from Jesus Ferreira, because I think Or Jesus Ferreira, sorry. The way he drops that ball right in is that kind of danger area where it's just behind the back line, but maybe far enough. Because one thing I wonder is if Takaoka comes out, he might not look much greater either. Because the way the ball is positioned, he maybe could have stepped up to, like, you know, he could have ended up in a position where he's flailing at air.
I mean, again, it's one of those things where, yeah, I'm not sure if Takaoka is the right guy to come and do that. That's not, it's not really his wheelhouse, right? But I part of me, I guess, you know, the prototypical 6'4" keeper comes out and just rises high above everyone and clears a ball like that out of the way.
Yeah, well, I wonder maybe if he could have, his starting position could have been different, because the fact that he's on his line, I'm just looking at it now, he was on his line covering the near post. Of course, you do have to play shoot, right? Because remember last year when he got cut out against RSL late in the year on a similar free kick off a shot. So maybe that's something where he's just kind of being careful, but maybe ideally you gamble a foot or two and step out anticipating that they're going to cross, right? But that's the thing with goalkeeping, that it's just so many split decisions that you can kind of see the mindset of, okay, maybe I could see why Takaoka would take a step or two forward, right? Like, that's kind of what you want, be aggressive. But then you remember, oh, last year an RSL did get you with that free kick. And maybe he's kind of thinking that subconsciously. It's something where it's definitely a break. It felt like the breakdown was a mix of factors too, because again, as well, the Whitecaps were holding a very high line. And one thing as well that I noticed right before the goal is that they all kind of, a bunch of them just drop off too, right? Which is so dangerous when you play a high line, because you drop off immediately, gives everyone, all the attackers around you, the chance to run in and be onside, right? Like, if you're going to play a high line, that's the risk of knowing, even if it's nervy, even if there's a ball, to kind of all stay together, knowing that your idea is you're trying to catch one of those guys offside, where they all kind of, a bunch of them at the back post dropped, and then it kind of left them in a situation where it was like a 3v2 at the back post. And of course, that's something Dallas wants. They know they're attacking a zone. That's one of the things you want when you're playing a zone, is overloading one of the zones and maybe catching one of the players unaware, like in between the zones. So yeah, I think it was something where there was just a multitude of little things that could overall be cleaned up. But I guess what's nice is, again, there's not an egregious breakdown. We're like, oh, Takaoka really looked lost there, or the back line was out of sorts. I just think, okay, those are little details to remember, that, okay, if we're going to play a high line, hold your line, right? Even if it's scary as it is, or take a foot or two back and start a little deeper, so you have more of a, because again, that's the hardest part of a defender, is when they play that pass and you're running and trying to head it back. Cause that's how you see own goals too. Cause it's like, it's hard to be running towards your own goal, like head it backwards. Like, you're going to end up heading it towards your own goal. So in that case, you're almost better off starting a foot too, so you can run and face the ball. But I think also credit has to be given to Ferreira for that cross. Cause he put it right in the sort of area where you can ask yourself these sorts of questions.
I mean, again, as you outlined, this is more very nuanced nitpicking than fundamental flaws in the Whitecaps' defensive approach, right? Which is good news, because last season there were some, as you said, it was not one moment, but six or seven throughout a match where they were just getting sometimes exposed in these kinds of situations. And overall, they look pretty competent this season in those kinds of scenarios. So, okay, that was my nitpicky thing. Now I want to level a bit of a compliment here, which is maybe the, you know, so the first half was, the narrative was fluid offensive play, you know, beautiful goals, the kind of dynamism we're looking for out of this team. The second half, I think, was a demonstration of the maturity, the growth, the cool head in terms of managing the kind of matches where they would have maybe given away points or let a team back in it last season. Because I just felt like in that second half, yes, okay, FC Dallas pushed in the early phases, but as the second half went on, it just felt like Vancouver strangled all the life out of the match, which is not something that this team has really been great at in years past. There's been times where they've tried to do that, and you can kind of gradually see them losing control of the match, or they don't know how to shut things down and kind of see out proceedings. But I thought this was a very effective sort of man management and game management in the second half, where they really, you know, yeah, as you mentioned, other than Pedar Musa, one or two chances, you know, and that one in particular, obviously, that he really should have done better with and at least had something on target. But there wasn't a lot in it for FC Dallas, and Vancouver just did such a nice job just being low event in the best way. And as you pointed out earlier, it seems like the team buy-in is just at a bit of a higher level. All those subs that came on, they were right in lockstep with what the tactical ideas were, their positioning, that balance of being on the ball when you needed to, but also, you know, dropping back into structure when you needed to recover. I just thought it seems like this whole team's taken a step forward in terms of their just kind of tactical maturity this season.
Yeah. And I think what's key too, is they're showing as well, they can suffer without the ball. That's a hallmark of a good defensive team, that sometimes you have to defend, right? Like, that's just the nature of the game. And what I found interesting as well, like in a game like this, this is where I'm a bit curious. If you've cheated and you've already checked, then fair enough. What do you think the possession was in this game? Just to throw it out there.
I have not actually checked. We know that FC Dallas liked to possess the ball going into this match, right? And that the Whitecaps were not particularly heavy. I'm not going to say crazy, though. I want to say like 55-45 for FC Dallas. But I'm like, maybe, is it steeper than that?
It's 59-41. So it's like...
Wow, it's, okay.
But I say that just because, again, you know, there was games in the past with the Whitecaps where it would be that split. You'd feel that split. You'd be like, man, like the Whitecaps aren't holding on to the ball.
It felt more like the 55-45 to me, just off instinct.
Yeah, and even like you could say 50-50 because naturally Dallas was chasing the game for 45 minutes, right? Like it's always going to skew possession because they were down 3-1 at half. I think that's really telling because, again, there are a lot of games in the past on the road where you'd see the possession is 60-40 for the opponent. They call it was a long day for Vancouver. And I think what's nice is this team can hold 35, 30, 40, 45, 50% of possession, and that doesn't bother them because they've shown this ability to stay within their structure and not be too bothered. Just go side to side in a little 3-4-3. The wingbacks know when to go up. The wingbacks know when to drop. The front threes doing its rhythm. Okay, Pico gets tired. Krylak, you're in. You know where to go. Shop, you're done. Okay, Martins, you know where to go. Like, there's this also like commitment to where you're not like bringing in new faces off the bench and they look completely out for lunch. Like, whoa, what am I doing? There's also the buy-in within the players. All right, Berhalter, you come in. Ali Ahmed, Jermaine Brown. And I think that's big because I think if you're able to suffer and defend off the ball, it just helps your team, right? Because especially when you're defending a lead, like it can be tough to sit back, right? We've seen it, right? There's times at the before it was like the death knell of the Whitecaps. Whenever they'd get a lead and they'd sit back, it would be criminal for them because they would just completely get battered. But now they have a good enough balance in their structure where, A, they're not sitting back too deep. For them, sitting back just means, all right, we're in our 3-4-3. Our front three is still pressing. Our front three is still applying pressure. We're not giving any easy access. I think that's a big difference. And then also on the ball, I think we're seeing a lot more. And again, they know how to slow down the game. They've got little avenues of, it's, you know, the little things of what I liked was 70th, 80 minutes. They just knew how every time there's a throw-in, you take 20, 30 seconds. Yohei Takaoka, goal kick, send everyone forward, hit a ball 70 meters as he can do to Brian White, flick it on, eat up the clock too. And I think, again, it's little things like, of course, that's just football that you could say, but it feels like at times the Whitecaps, when they'd have those sorts of leads, it wouldn't be that cool, calm, like, all right, let's slow down the game. Because for them, it always felt like when they do that, that was when they were at their most vulnerable because they almost felt uncomfortable having to lock down and be pragmatic. Right, it's like always that like looking over your shoulder, whereas now when they're in this sort of game state, as we're starting to see, there's a bit of comfort in this idea of that, yeah, we can do a little of the dirty thing, slow down a game, defend off the ball, be patient in possession too, because you can defend the lead by having possession. There are also moments where they win the ball back and they're like, all right, screw it, we're going to play around with our center backs, we're going to hit the wing back, we're going to go back to Takaoka. And I think that as well, like, it's all I think we're seeing a maturity as well in terms of how they manage games. And I think that's huge because, as we saw last year, one big area that would kill them is that they would have dominant 80-minute stretches, 70-minute stretches, but then they would get killed by 5-10 minutes of just frenetic, right? And then you'd end up going in a situation where Vanni Sartini's in his press conference, he's like, guys, I don't know what to tell you. We played great today, but we lost or we drawn. And it's like, well, that's that pragmatism as well, that you need to be able to grind out results. And that's something we talked heavily about in our preseason coverage, being like, all right, we need to see a bit of a more mature, measured approach. And I think we're also seeing that in some of those, the way they're grinding and all those aspects mentioned.
Well, so when you talk about that change, here's something that comes to mind for me immediately. You know, the personnel shifts that happened this offseason weren't big, but I do think they've been important, because early in the season last year in matches, you know, if you had Brian White starting up front, who are you going to have coming off the bench in those 75th, 80th minute? It was a Sergio Cordova or a Simon Betcher, both who, you know, showed flashes of being able to score goals at times. But I don't know if that tactical maturity, that discipline, that, you know, all the things that Fafa Pico and Demir Krylak, like, I thought Demir Krylak was really good for what he needed to do off the bench against FC Dallas. All the little stuff you talked about, just, hey, knock it around in possession if we need to, drop back if we need to, whatever the little situation called for. So I think the Whitecaps just having, you know, that defensive structure really starts at the top of the pitch with that front three pressing. Having some guys this season that can set that tone and can kind of guide the rest of the team, I think that's made a difference, whether they're looking for a goal or just trying to shut things down. And also, I think, you know, guys like Fafa and Demir probably had an impact on the squad overall, the way they carry themselves and the way they act in these types of moments. So, you know, again, small sample size. It's been three matches. It's only really these last two on the road where we're heaping on the praise, but I do think we're, at least in the short term, already seeing some payback, some return on the investments that were made this offseason.
Yeah, and I mean, look, even that's it. It is a small sample size. That's why we're going to keep an eye on all these things. Like, is the set piece improvement just a mirage? For what it's worth, it doesn't seem so, because they're not eating a bunch of big set piece chances every game like they were last year. Like, there's other areas where it's like, it does feel like there's a genuine improvement. But look, I think overall this is a good three-game sample size, because, again, what were we saying after Charlotte? We're like, look, honestly, it was not, it wasn't the sky is falling down performance. It felt like it was just a bit of a missed opportunity. But what have we always said, at least I've always said in MLS, if you're going to drop points at home, which, look, it happens, right? Like, again, there's no team in the world that, like, goes, whatever, it's 17-0 at home, right? Like, there's always, even the teams that what go undefeated, sometimes they draw, right? Like, that's just the nature of the game. What do? You got to go in on the road. And I think it's really huge that through three games, points home and away, I'd say a good start is, you know, you win your home game, you draw both your away games for a total of 5 points. The Whitecaps are at seven. They're ahead of where they should be. Heading out of a stretch like this. And I think that's a sign of a lot of the things we touched upon, such as maturity, such of the veteran heads, the improvements. And yeah, I'll be curious to see where they go from here, especially as the other is that Akubi gets up to full fitness and Ahmed, because it feels like they could even further add to some of those elements that we've said have been good, but also things that maybe have been lacking, right? Like, I think, of course, Ahmed can bring a bit more in the final third that's been, you know, almost lacking a bit, that overall dynamicism that we've said could be used there. And I imagine he'll bring that, or Adekugbe, of course, with some set piece service as well, will also help on offense as much as just possession and defense as he brings. But I guess, Sam, on that note, do you have anything else to dive into on Dallas? And if not, let's move quickly on to some around MLS in five or less. Of course, we have no stingers for that, but we're just going to dive right in to that before we get set for the Whitecaps' next game. Because, again, I guess never get used to this. It's an international break. It's nice. I've had a break from men's club football. in European this week. There's some interesting games. Like today, as of recording, there's some funky European qualifiers. Got some Asian World Cup qualifying. You know, you got Nations League tonight in CONCACAF on the weekend. You got Canada men's national team, huge game. And then we're right into MLS. But before we preview that, around the MLS in five, look, I'm going to start with the fun one because we have to. What the heck happened in Montreal versus Chicago? I watched the game and I still don't know what the heck happened. Montreal goes up 3-1. They scored two penalties inside 10 minutes. And then Chicago scores a ghost goal off an offside that somehow was not even flagged. It was, and then Montreal makes it 3-1 off a beautiful goal. And then just a mix of absolutely refereeing disaster, some big mistakes, the wind. I mean, just what the heck happened in that one?
I didn't watch it live, but I watched the highlights back. And what kind of, yeah, I don't even know what to say about that match. Just, I mean, insane from the get off, really, with those two early penalties. It felt like the match had barely even started. And, now all of a sudden Montreal's up a couple. And then obviously in the late stages, I mean, certainly some dubious officiating decisions. Obviously a real microscope on, the officiating decisions based on the way the league's handled negotiations with the professional referees and all that stuff. And then sometimes Mother Nature just gets in the way as well. So man, I don't know. If you're CF Montreal, I think you have to just write that one off, kind of erase it from the memory and go back to the drawing board for next match, because sometimes stuff like that just happens, and there's only so much you can do about it.
Yeah, I think it was a good lesson for them because, yeah, I mean, look, they definitely have a bone to pick, no doubt, because the first one was the most egregious one, because the thing is, they're up 2-0. Yeah, you could be like, oh, they got two penalties. To Matias Caccaro's credit, he won both of them very fairly. And like, by the way, he's a heck of a signing. He just brings a good vibe to that Montreal team. Again, I don't know if it's just so there's something about Uruguayan dudes with mustaches who tuck in their shorts that just, there's this vibe. Matias Laborda, of course, brings that with the Whitecaps. And of course, Caccaro now bringing that for Montreal. They just have this aura that are around them that makes them so fun to watch when they're feeling it. And Caccaro is certainly feeling it, wins both, converts both. Just absolutely brilliant. But yeah, they're up 2-0 on the road. For that offside goal was the most egregious because certainly you can talk about all the other decisions, but it's a 2-0 game. If you haven't had it, seen it, this chance again. I was genuinely baffled because I was watching the game. Chicago player makes the run. He takes it down. He goes and scores. And they show the replay. He's clearly like a good half foot ahead of the defender. I was like, oh, this is easy offside. Like I've seen way closer offsides like this get called back. I put my head down because I was just like checking out. I think I was on Twitter. And I was like, all right, they're going to call this out. Let me see what Twitter's saying while they do some indubitably long VAR review as they do. And then like a minute goes by and I look up and they're kicking off and it's 2-1. I'm like, did I miss a goal? Like, did they call it back and then Chicago just score? Oh no, they allowed the goal for this offside that was about a foot. And I think that really just hurt the momentum because from that point on, Chicago kind of got back in the game. Yeah, Montreal made it 3-1. But then from there, Montreal gets this late red card with Raheem Edwards, which again, it's that one's a little tougher because there was definitely an elbow from Edwards. He caught someone, but it was just a bit outrageous because he was nowhere near the ball and ended up giving a penalty and the red card. So it's the double jeopardy where that felt extremely harsh. And then it's 3-2. And then all of a sudden, yeah, there. Then the third one, it's 3-2. Chicago kicks a ball out. It's supposed to be a goal kick. They get a corner. They then score on the second phase of said corner. And then just the fourth goal was funny. I think at that point it was almost coming that Kellen Acosta mishits the crap out of his pass. He almost looks down in frustration, like, oh, I missed my pass by like 30 yards. The wind picks it up, drags it. Jonathan Sirwa, who came out because he thought he was going to get an easy claim, it ends up sailing over his head and into the goal. I think that was a good learning lesson for all of them that, hey, no matter what, sometimes you just got to stick your head in and get your way through the ugly parts of a game like that.
Yeah, that was just so many moments in that match to look back on and go, what the heck was going on there? Alex, elsewhere around MLS, I mean, one for me that I watched and had some fun with was Seattle and Colorado. I mean, obviously, Seattle facing some injuries. It's not been a great start to the season. You know, Colorado get their doors blown off on opening day by Portland. But since, I think the Rapids have shown some signs. They beat RSL, which, you know, we're gonna talk about RSL in a little bit here. And then it took them a long time in this match, the Rapids, to finally break through and get a goal, but it was a long time coming for them, and Seattle was reeling for a good portion of that second half. So, I mean, I guess kind of a two-parter, Alex, for you, based on what you saw in the match is, you know, see, everyone kind of thought that Seattle was as sure as a sure thing went in the Western Conference coming into the season. Are there genuine concerns about the Sounders? And also, you know, despite the rocky start to Chris Armas's tenure in Colorado, do we think that Colorado can do something this season in the West? Because they've looked good the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, good. Two tough questions. I'll start with the Rapids one. I think they've got some juice in them for a late bottom of the Western Conference push. I don't know. Watching them, I've been watching them a lot closer the last few weeks just to keep an eye on Canadian Moyes Bombito, who's been having a great start to the season. Like, they look solid. They look very solid defensively. They've been doing a good job of cleaning things up at the back. And they're starting to figure things out offensively. I think what's interesting, too, it feels like they have another level to give because, you know, Georgi Mihailovic has not looked very great. If he can return to anything close to his Montreal form, that's a huge boost to their attack. I want to say it's Navarro. I don't know if it's Joshua Navarro or it's Rafael Navarro, the new DP striker they have up top. He looks like a good little piece. You know, they've Darren Yappe's always been someone that I've kind of impressed with. Connor Ronan's been out injured. I mean, we talked a few weeks about how great he can be. Like, this Colorado team, I think they have the pieces to push for a bottom level spot. And, you know, Chris Armas, I think it's tough to gauge him as a coach because he seems like one of those where obviously the theory's there as a coach. Like, you don't get hired as at clubs like Man United and Leeds if you don't have a certain grasp of theory and the ability to wow people with your ability to know the game. But also, as we saw with TFC, especially when the roster isn't right, can be tough to transmit that to his players, and he hasn't always shown the greatest track record of communicating with his players. But for what it's worth, this, I don't know, there's a lot of pieces in this Rapids team I'm impressed with. I think if Armas, as long as he, you know, doesn't make some of the missteps he did with TFC, where he just kind of, it felt like by the end of his short tenure there, he was just on such bad relations with everyone, which is always going to hurt you no matter how much you know the game. There seems to be enough juice where we saw it on the flip side with the Red Bulls, where when he got things clicking there, he can be a decent coach on his day. So I say for Colorado, as for Seattle, I just don't have enough attacking juice. Like, they've been in all of their games. That's the thing. It's all 1-1s, 2-0s, 2-1s. Like, but they just have no attacking juice. And that one's so surprising because I guess that was a bit of a complaint of them at times last year. But, and I guess you could say they really miss Nico Ladero. But even then, Nico Ladero didn't really play last year, right? He was a super sub. And I guess really this shows that a priority needs to be replacing him. If it's Rusnak, who, you know, I don't know if he's dealing with the knock or something. He came off the bench in this game. They've seen him as a potential replacement, but they need some goals because they just look so lifeless in attack. Like, Leo Chu doesn't look as dynamic as he did to start last year. Like, playing Raul Ruidíaz as a 10, and he actually looked good in that role. But, you know, he's not a natural 10, say. He's not what Ladero used to do, where he just would terrorize any defense in the league with his passing and whatnot. Like, Jordan Morris does not look he seems to have maybe lost a bit of a step to start this year after he was so dominant to start last year. Like, there's not enough juice in that attack. And I don't know if there is enough in their current roster for them to find it.
Yeah, kind of co-signed both of those things where I think, yeah, if Armas can get everyone in Colorado on the same page and get the most out of some of those players, then they can be dangerous, and they've shown signs that at least there's that potential in there. Yeah, in terms of Seattle, I mean, this obviously was they were so good defensively last year that it kind of didn't matter. And then you get the odd Leo Chu heater that would sort of propel them to success. And then, you know, Morris was off to a really hot start and then couldn't continue that. It just feels like right now Seattle, they have all this dangerous looking possession around the edge of the box, but they really struggle to translate it into anything meaningful in terms of like actual dangerous shots and then goals beyond that. So they need Pedro de la Vega back, obviously, as soon as possible. That would be nice, just another option for them. But you know, these Cascadia teams, sometimes they're slow burns, right? It takes a little bit for the likes of Seattle and Portland to ramp up. But I have to imagine by the summer, we'll see more out of Seattle, especially, you know, maybe if they're able to make a clever addition or two. All right, speaking of elsewhere in the West, Alex, we were talking last week about Minnesota United, what they've been able to do. And man, no real deep commentary here for me, but they just continue to roll 2-0 over LAFC. This Minnesota United team looks for real.
Yeah, first game of Eric Ramsey, and they make the most of it with a 2-0 clean sheet over LAFC. Of course, Dane Sinclair, Canadian goalkeeper, making his mark in that one. Good to see. And yeah, it's good because I think for Minnesota, what they've shown is, I mean, we kind of touched on it a few weeks ago. They've got some names in attack between the likes of Pukki, Jong. You know, I think Caden Clark still has a lot of upside that, you know, he could hit from a few years ago after a few wayward years. Robin Lud, we can't forget in that mix. Emmanuel Reynoso is back from injury. We know how dangerous he can be. Tanny Olawasi, the Canadian's gotten off to a great start. Bongi, Holowani. He's up, of course. I may have just absolutely murdered his last name, but definitely they all call him Bongi there. So, you know, I'm talking about in that regard. Like, they've got some names in the attack now, and the fact that Pukki's finally solved that number nine problem, they can score. And look, there are some red flags with them defensively, so keep an eye because they've conceded 8.2 XG, which is second worst in the West, only after Austin, and we know how bad Austin's defense is. And actually, 8.2 is the third worst in the league. So definitely some improvement to be had there. But also, if you're Minnesota, you can get away with that when you have a Dane Sinclair in goal, right? Consistently someone who can perform above the expected goals. And I think that kind of shows how I feel about this Minnesota team now, which is, I mean, it was dating back to a few years ago. I don't know what's taking them so long to upgrade their defense. Like, it feels like this isn't new. Like, I can remember old previews we did where we're looking like, yeah, that defense is a bit leaky, like all the time in the world for a Michael Boxall. But it's just like wild to think that he's now pushing 35 and they, you know, he's still starting week in, week out, which again, I watch him and he does a solid job, but it's something where maybe at least like someone who could push him in that sort of role or pair alongside him. But I think for the most part, there's some goals in this team. So if Eric Ramsey at the very least can tighten things up defensively, and then maybe they make a big addition in the summer there, this Minnesota team looks like they could kind of take advantage of if a Seattle continues to sputter to start. And, you know, if LA continues to be a bit quiet to start, it feels wide open right now. And it's begging for teams like Vancouver, who we've seen do that, Minnesota, some of those teams, heck, Colorado, if they can continue this to really take the place of some of those teams.
Yeah, it's very interesting that Seattle and LAFC, the two teams, everyone was kind of like, all right, those two are top of the West. They have not been off to great starts. So I think everyone else in the Western Conference, their eyes get a little bit wider because now there's an opportunity, right? Speaking of two other teams in the West that have been off to pretty decent starts, St. Louis City, LA Galaxy this past weekend. This one was so emblematic of just the way these teams are, which is helter-skelter. They can score tons of goals, but it might be a mess on the defensive side of the ball. Big shout out to Roman Berkey, who was just tremendous in this match. He made like 3-4 top-tier reflex saves. And this one really in the late stages got busted wide open. And St. Louis City probably pretty annoyed to give away some points at the death. But a fun match to watch. But not one necessarily, I think, Alex, that makes me – these teams are obviously both St. Louis and LA Galaxy. They're dangerous because of the talented attacking players they have and the way the play style can really break some matches wide open. But I think, you know, if you look at it on the flip side, these are teams that might struggle to to keep the ball out of the net on a consistent basis.
Yeah, that's the fascinating part with these two teams. They're so exciting, but so flawed, right? Like, I mean, this Galaxy team can score for fun. They have generated a ridiculous 9.2 XG through four games. I'm looking here. Other than Miami's 9.9 and DC's 8.5, like, no one has more than like 7.4. Like, they are generating chances at a ridiculous clip. They've got a good attack, like Jovalich. You know, he's a good scorer. Fagundes, you know, he's a veteran of this league. Ricky Puig, as Vanni Sartini has said, and I mean, I'll echo that statement, one of the best players in the league. Pretty much, you can argue, and if you're talking non-guys not named Messi, he might be number one. And he continues to show it week after week. Joseph Pantsil has been a phenomenal signing. He just looks dangerous every time he gets the ball. So, yeah, I think that's this LA team's going to generate chances and score goals. The only thing is, do they have enough at the back? They're currently rocking a center back pair of a 36-year-old Martin Caceres, who got a red in this game, and then Maya Yoshida, who's 35. Both two very good defenders in the past, but in a league like MLS where there's so much speed, so much transitional threat, a pair of 35-year-old center backs, that's a very dangerous game to play, especially when in goal where. You know, the LA Galaxy are currently rocking with John McCarthy, who ended up making the switch over from LAFC. You know, he's a decent goalkeeper, but he's not going to be someone who wins you games on his own. And that's where, on the flip side, St. Louis, you can get away with it, because I think we saw it last year. Last year for them was Roman Berkey being in their entire defense, and then it was just scoring off ridiculous amounts of XG. It's like 0.3 XG, and they'd win 3-0 because Berkey kept a clean sheet. I think what's nice is that they're actually generating a lot more chances this year, which we didn't see from St. Louis. They're not just XG prayer and hope. Like, they've got a good attack. You know what Joel Klaus can do. Ezeal Jackson, Samuel Adeniran has been a real sleeper for me. They're good on set pieces. And they're generating more XG up to 5.5 from four games, which is, decent. But Roman Berkey's continue to do their thing. So that's where I'm all of a sudden a bit more bullish on St. Louis than I thought I was. Of course, we'll see how this starts the year. But, hey, they're generating more XG, which was the big complaint about them last year. Yeah, defensively, they can be a bit of a mess. But, hey, when you have Roman Berkey, I guess that's one of the perks of having a DP-quality goalkeeper like that. Because there aren't many in the league certainly that are at that level of pedigree.
It kind of feels like, to echo your comment about St. Louis, like, they've been able to look at what they did last year and said, okay, let's create a somewhat sustainable version of that play, right? Like, really not changing the overall formula that much, but just making it a little bit more sustainable in the long term. And we'll see how that pans out over the course of the whole season, but yeah, nice to have someone in Berkey back there that can paper over a lot of deficiencies, match in, match out. All right, Alex, that was kind of a look back at what happened in MLS this past weekend. Are we ready to transition forward and take a look at Real Salt Lake this weekend at BC Place?
Yeah, let's do it. It should be an exciting one. Another 4:30 kick, so, great for those who are team 4:30. I think the next one after is a 7:30. So, of course, a split of a. If you like one or the other, this is the chance for that. But 4:30 kick. Of course, it's a bit of an unconventional one, as mentioned, during the international break. So both teams are going to have some key absences, but it should be a good game. The Whitecaps win. They can continue to push up the table. Who knows? Maybe some points get dropped around them. They end up finishing the weekend near or on top of the West. Currently, I think at the moment they're what, second, right, only behind Minnesota. A win, maybe Minnesota drops some points. We're talking about a first place in the West Whitecaps team. It's a lot at stake for the Whitecaps in this one. I guess just some news and notes before we kind of dive into the preview. Vanni Sartini, we've been waiting for some news on this. His suspension has officially been reduced from 6 games to 4 games. What that means, with this being game number 4, this is the last game of Vanni Sartini's suspension. So, Michael D'Agostino, who's currently rocking, by the way, a 3-win and 0-1 tie record in 4 games as a head coach. So shout out to him for that. He will get his last game manning the sideline before Vanni Sartini returns. Otherwise, for the Whitecaps, we'll dive into some of the RSL absences after. The Whitecaps we'll be missing Andres Cubas, who got called in for Paraguay for some friendlies, including one against Russia, by the way, which is super random. And then, of course, Fafa Pico getting called in to play for Haiti. Meanwhile, in terms of injuries, everyone else is healthy and available, including one Sam Adekugbe, who, of course, won't start. He might only play 5 to 15 minutes, but he is available for the first time all season as he returns from a knee injury, which is massive.
Yeah, it's obviously tremendous to hear. And yeah, interesting what the Whitecaps will do in the middle of the park. You know, obviously, Pedro Vite has been pretty strong. Andres Cubas off to a really good start. So will we see Seb Berhalter dive straight in there? Do you see a touch of Ralph Priso minutes off the bench? I don't know. Be interesting. And then up front, you're going to get the Demir Krylak revenge match. Not only he's probably going to play this one, even if Fafa was available. But again, we'll bang that drum about, you know, how do they find a way to get that front three involved, you know, in a way that both accentuates what Demir can do, but also gets the most out of Brian White. Cause I think that was something that was huge from the match down in Dallas, was how much more dynamic Brian White looked in a slightly different setup. So obviously the Whitecaps will be hoping to replicate that this weekend. And absences for both teams, right? You know, Diego Luna and Andres Gomez missing for RSL. So those are two attackers that have been important to RSL. I mean, Gomez this season had a brace in that snow game against LAFC. Luna, obviously just a young player with a lot of talent, a lot of expectation around him. And then some injuries for RSL too, right? So, you know, that's something where I was chatting last night actually with someone who covers Real Salt Lake. And I think that's the concern for them is there enough in attack with those absences and injuries to really threaten, especially away from home, where they might go and be a little more pragmatic with the ball. Can they just have enough of those moments to maybe break a match open?
Yeah, and I mean, just a few other absences as well. 18-year-old goalkeeper Gavin Beavers, he's with the US U23s. He's been filling in the net to start the year, so he looked decent. Of course, Pablo Ruiz as well. They're very expensive. I think he's DP, if I'm not mistaken, or certainly one of their high-priced players, Pablo Ruiz, out for the year with the knee injury. So that's a huge blow. But yeah, I think that's a fair summation of how to feel about this RSL team of, you know, how where the goal is going to come from in this week. Of course, Chicho Arango is there, but you know, he can only do so much if he doesn't have the service. And that's where someone like Luna is so key. Every time I watch him, he's so creative. Andres Gomez as well can support it. And yeah, it's been a bit of a weird start to the year for RSL, because you look at it, they're actually right now second in the West in expected goal difference. They're doing a good job of generating chances and keeping them away from their goal. But to start the year, they've got 5 goals, 5 against. They've just been scoring slightly under their expected, conceding slightly more. And that's kind of just describes their start. 1 win, 1 draw, 2 losses. To be fair, their schedule did them no favors, because I think their opening game was against Miami on the road in that midweek slot. That was super weird. Of course, Miami ended up beating them in that game. Then they went and played St. Louis just 3 days later, also away, ended up drawing. So that was a bit of a rough start. And to be fair, they then bounced back, right? They got the win against LAFC at home in the snow game. They did then lose at home to Colorado in a bit of a frustrating game. I watched that one. I thought, you know, RSL, they missed a few chances because they went up 1-0. They could have easily, you know, killed the game, and Colorado ended up getting the back. And then they've gotten a bye since. So they've gotten a bit of rest. So yeah, just definitely a weird start is how I describe it for RSL, because it feels like, based on the numbers, based on the roster, this should be a team that should be pushing mid to you know, somewhere from 6th to 3rd in the West when it comes down to it. Yet it just, you know, they've been solid, but it hasn't felt like they've hit that level yet. And I think that's something where, despite the absences, they'll want to get to that sooner rather than later. Although I'm very curious to see what they do long-term with Ruiz, because Ruiz was only ruled out for the year on March 6th. like it was. So yeah, I think that's definitely going to be one of the big areas they're going to have to figure out if they're going to live up to their potential, because there's goals in this lineup, but maybe Ruiz, that Ruiz injury is, it could contribute to them slipping a bit more defensively.
Yeah, I think it's one where injuries aside, this is, it hasn't been as concerning of a start for RSL as, say, for example, FC Dallas or obviously the Earthquakes, who have been really struggling and were, it was a tough loss again this past weekend for the Quakes. Something, I think to note too with this RSL team is that, I mean, especially when Beavers has been back there in goal, it kind of the heir to the throne there. After Zach McMath, Beavers, I think, still only 18 or just maybe turned 19. Yeah. So, average squad age of 25.4 in their last match. So, a younger team. And Matt Crooks, obviously, a veteran guy they brought in without Ruiz with some injuries this weekend. That's going to be someone I think that's going to have to play a key role up front. RSL's mostly been in a 4-2-3-1 with Chicho Arango up front and those three guys in behind, kind of feeding him the ball where they can. And last time out, obviously 2 weeks ago now against Colorado, it was Crooks in the middle, Gomez and Luna flanking him underneath Arango. So they're going to have to find a couple others to play in those wide attacking roles against Vancouver. And obviously for Vancouver, that's kind of been their calling card so far this season, is keeping things in structure defensively, not allowing that middle of the park. I think the Ranko-Veselinovic against Arango matchup, can they prevent those runs? Can they prevent him getting the ball inside the box in those dangerous areas that he likes, being able to make a quick turn and get off a shot? I'm sure the Whitecaps will be looking to deny those chances. And if he doesn't quite have the level of service he normally has, that's kind of certainly the matchup to watch, I think, for on that side of the ball. On the flip side for Vancouver attacking Real Salt Lake, I mean, I think Marcelo Silva and Brian Vera for the most part have been or Brayan Vera, pardon me, not Brian, have been really solid at the back in the back line there. I've always felt like the fullbacks for Salt Lake is maybe not a huge position of strength. That's somewhere where they've had a bit of rotation and just maybe not had the same level of quality. But within MLS, there's always got to be a point in your squad where you're maybe playing with a little bit more rotation. So Ali Ahmed, what can he do? How many minutes is he going to play? Something where he could take advantage of maybe RSL at the back in those wide areas.
Yeah, I think those are definitely key matchups to watch. Those RSL fullbacks, if you can get some speed, and that's where I think one thing it is a bit disappointing. Pico will be missed because another stat, RSL are third in possession, and we kind of said that with Dallas, they're a high possession team. A Pico hitting them in transition could be a bit of an asset, or if they don't have that, maybe that's where a guy like an Ahmed could end up stepping in, right? Levante Johnson, as we mentioned before. Because it sounds like Krylak will start, but maybe he ends up playing a bit deeper too with no Kubas. Maybe there's some sort of way to skewer the system so he ends up playing a bit deeper and you still fit in like an Ahmed at wing back. Because hopefully Ahmed told again the always great, always reliable Harjeet Johal, who was on the ground at training all week, as she always does. So make sure to follow her on Twitter at Hard Journalist if you want all the Whitecaps injury and updates. She spoke to Ahmed and he said that, look, I'm 90 minute fit now, I'm ready, I've been recently cleared. So who knows, maybe he ends up starting at wing back, they get a little pace through that, they go for a Berhalter Vite pivot, and then maybe that frees up Krylak to play in a bit more of a 10 role, knowing that Ahmed's going to be pushing up alongside him, right? Like maybe that's something we end up seeing with no Peacock. So hopefully they can find a way to expose RSL's fullbacks like in that way if they're holding a lot more possession. And then yeah, the Arango point's huge, because when I watched that Colorado game, Arango got isolated with Moise Bombido a bunch of times, and Bombido won that 1v1 battle every time, and that made a huge difference. That kept him quiet. But Arango is very dangerous 1v1. So if it ends up being Veselinovic, ends up being Laborda, because could he be either of those? Arango seems to like to go to that left side. So the Whitecaps right, because he likes cutting on the right, or who knows, maybe he tries to go up against Blackman, where of the three, I think actually might be the weaker link in 1v1 defending, just because Laborda's, you know, he's been a good 1v1 defender. That's always been Ranko's bread and butter, that 1v1 defending. Who knows, maybe we see Arrigo kind of Arango pop up on that side to try to expose Blackman. But other than that, the Whitecaps, feels like in midfield there could be some joy for them to have some space to be found. That's where Colorado really caught RSL by surprise, and that game was hitting through some of those central channels and catching them out that way. Could be interesting, especially with that's like I think where they miss Ruiz, because Crooks plays as more of a 10. By the way, he's such a interesting player to watch, because he's like 6'4" and he's a number 10. And that was something that they were really talking about on the broadcast, how unusual it is. He also isn't the most agile guy, so if he is playing at the 10, there could be some cases where you catch him higher up the pitch and you can hit in transition with the legs of Vitae Ahmed in that middle area, which could be worth watching for the Whitecaps.
Well, so I think I'll just transition us basically into some Whitecaps lineup talk. What do you think they're going to do with the complexion of that midfield without Kubas? Does Krylak drop back deeper? Do we see Alessandro Schopf move into a more central position if Ahmed's going to start out in the wing? Is this Seb Berhalter's music? What are you thinking?
I think it has to be Berhalter, Vite. I think where the interesting is going to be, for example, what we could see Ahmed at right wing back, but then maybe we see Schopf at left wing back. And by doing that, because sometimes what the Whitecaps have often been doing when Schopf plays out wide is he ends up tucking into a midfielder. In this game against Dallas, it ended up being, I think it was the 3-3-4, because Pico ended up tucking up wide on the left and Raposo ended up tucking wide on the right. If they're to do a similar buildup or, you know, of course with Pico they can't really, but what you could do is if you put Schopf at left wing back and Ahmed at right wing back, that would guarantee that Schopf would be the one to tuck in to join Berhalter and Vite. And then that would allow Ahmed more of a free role to potentially go at wing backs. I wonder if that's something we could see. But yeah, I think it's something where I think it has to be Berhalter and Vita. I just think what Berhalter will bring, he'll have a big job with, you know, if he's going up against the Crooks or, you know, helping support Narango and freeing up Vita. Whereas I think if you're going shop Vita, I think you're asking a lot defensively of Vita. And I think when you're looking at those holes that are there in RSL's midfield, you kind of want Vite again with that bit more of that attacking impetus. So maybe it's something where we get thrown for a loop. I could see it from right to left and Ahmed, Vite, Berhalter, Schopf four, which would be quite the interesting group.
Yeah, I really think maybe this is a hot take, but I really think that Schopf should get another start, because I like the idea of what they could do in possession and, you know, kind of taking advantage of that space that RSL might provide them with Schopf tucking in and then, yeah, giving Ahmed that space to surge forward, giving Vite an opportunity to get on the ball with the support of a Schopf who I think is very good and, you know, responsible defensively. He doesn't always do a ton on the ball, but we talk about that tactical maturity, that discipline this team showed. Alessandro Schopf is a big part of that. We saw it when Kubas, Gressel, and Schopf played together at the beginning of last year. They had some really good moments together. So I actually kind of, yeah, low-key, I think I'm looking out for that in the starting lineup. But then to me, Alex, that still leaves a bit of a question mark of, okay, how does slapping Krylak, White, and Gold together in the front three, what are you going to do to change how that attack looks? Is it as simple as just adding Ahmed into the fold and that will make everything better?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the simple answer to bring some of that more speed. I am very curious to see what ends up happening with the Krylak and Gold in this scenario. Like, do maybe we see Gold shunted a bit more wide to see Krylak step into that 10, right? Like, that's it. The Krylak deployment's really the big question.
White has to play centrally. They can't move White out to the wing again.
So, yeah, that's why I'm curious. Because what I'm wondering is, for example, a buildup we could see is, again, like I mentioned with Ahmed and Cedra, what you could do is where Ahmed in possession tucks up as the right winger, maybe you make Gold like the left winger in possession, right? That's not an unfamiliar role for him. And then you go, you kind of go Krylak underneath White, right? I think that's the ideal scenario. Cause I think, yeah, if you're asking Krylak to do too much running, as we've seen, that's not his best role. Get him on the ball, get him touches. So definitely something to watch in that regard. But look, I guess on that note, should we just throw out some projections in terms of the Whitecaps lineup? I mean, look, to kind of echo what I've said so far, I'd probably keep it simple. Takoka and goal, Laborda, Veselinovic, Blackman right to left. No messing around with the back. And I think I'll stick with that prediction of Ahmed, Vite, Berhalter, Schopf, Krylak, White, Gold. What I could see, again, I think there's maybe room for a Raposo start too. Maybe you go Raposo, Ahmed as your wingbacks, something like that. But I think other than that switch, or maybe a Martins as well up wingbacks, he actually had a pretty good cameo off the bench as well against Dallas. I think you have to imagine Ahmed gets his first start in this one. And I think it looks like Krylak will slot in. So I can't, those are kind of the only positions of contention, is that left wing back and I guess sort of that right wing back.
Yeah, I really like Raposo as a bench option in this match, especially if the Whitecaps are looking for a breakthrough later on, like your 65th minute shot for Raposo sub seems perfect. And then, you know, I'll give a shout out again. I'm going to keep saying it until they do it. I want to see Levante Johnson get 10, 15 minutes off the bench as well. I think that would be good. Yeah, no notes for me in terms of that lineup. I think I'm going to go with the same thing. And then, I mean, diving into to score, how we see this one going down, I do rate Real Salt Lake. And I think they'll do some good things this season, despite those injuries and absences. And, you know, I think they're probably better than what they've shown so far. But I do feel like with who they're missing and the fact they're having to come up to BC Place in front of a good crowd, I feel like this is one where the Whitecaps edge it out 2-1. But I think it's a good match, a competitive one, and yeah, what I'm looking forward to seeing in person.
Yeah, I think the Whitecaps get their home form back on track with the win. Let's go 2-0 Whitecaps. Where it's a bit bold to say that Arango won't get on the board at least once, but I think it's something where the Whitecaps keep up their good defensive start. Yeah, they'll miss Kubas, but I mean, hey, they were without Kubas against Tigres, and they were a free kick goal away from keeping a clean sheet against Tigres. So they've shown that they can defend with the Berhalter slotting in. So yeah, on that regard, I'd probably go 2-0 Whitecaps.
I like the positivity. We we gotta see if we can get on the same page here with the team and go for a clean sweep in terms of our predictions, because it's been a little bit spotty so far. I mean, those road wins, they catch you off guard a little bit.
Well, what did we go for Dallas? I'm trying to remember. I'm
like, you went for a win, I went for a draw. So at least we went 1-2 there. It was a bold prediction by you, but a good one. So yeah, big ups to Alex for getting that.
Well, let's see. I guess, yeah, now we're looking for the first time where we're both predicting something. If we'll get the win, we'll see in that regard. But yeah, definitely a big one to watch out for. Make sure it's a big weekend for those heading the game. Make sure you plan accordingly, just because, of course, if there's fans of the Canadian men's national team, they play Trinidad and Tobago at 1 o'clock. The Whitecaps play at 4:30. Also, if you're a fan of the MLS Next Pro team, they play at BC Place before the Whitecaps. I'd have to assume, there's some sort of a way to watch those sorts of games. I think usually BC Place games, all but one last year, were open to fans. So hey, if you want to also check out Next Pro, make sure to plan accordingly and get there early enough. I think it's something like an 11:30 or so kick for that. So something to keep an eye on. It's a busy soccer Saturday, and hopefully it's nice weather for that one to mark the start of a good homestand for the Whitecaps. I think it's 4 games in total after a bit of this road swing to start the year. So definitely a big one. But I guess on that note, quickly just to round off our MLS chatter, let's just roll through this. What are some games you're keeping an eye on this week in the West and Eastern Conference, Sam, for MLS action?
Yeah, we had three games highlighted here. I think one's, you know, some with some implications for the Whitecaps in the West, something to watch, and then one which I think will just be a matchup of two good teams in the East and teams that have really shown something so far this season. So, yeah, San Jose versus Seattle. Obviously, you know, a Whitecaps supporter saw San Jose a couple weeks ago. They've been off to a really rough start. Just haven't been able to find any joy at all. Obviously, expectations were a lot higher going into the season. And, you know, they've got to try to get right against Seattle, who's looking to hit the ground running as well. So that's, you know, two teams probably with, obviously San Jose had some expectations, but not to the same level as Seattle. Something is going to give there. And certainly if it's a 3-point result either way, that's going to be a devastating blow for whoever comes out in the losing end. So that's one to watch out for. And then, is that LAFC against SKC, Alex, that we have listed in the notes here? Or is that the Galaxy?
I'm pretty sure it's the Galaxy. I usually make sure to add LAFC if it is. It is the Galaxy. I just, they're, for me, they're LA. They've been there first.
Well, there you go. I mean, obviously, so we talked about everything that the Galaxy are able to do in terms of their chance creation, but also maybe at the defensive end. You know, what do they have to work with? SKC, it's interesting. They obviously got off to such a bad start last year and then went on a bit of a run. You know, you still have Alan Pulido, you still have Johnny Russell, Shalloui, some, you know, Eric Tommy. There's some good players in that squad, but I don't really know exactly what to make of SKC just yet. It's kind of a mixed bag week to week. So a good test for them against the Galaxy. And then the final one, Columbus Crew, man, until we see some sort of evidence that they don't look like, you know, defending MLS champions, we have to treat them as such. They've been just looking so like comfortable and dominant, like a true front-running team. I don't feel like we get that often in MLS, where, you know, kind of at the top of the Premier League or the top of the Bundesliga, you get these teams that just come into every match with the expectation that we're going to dictate terms and control proceedings and you're just going to have to deal with it. But this Columbus Crew side has that feel to it, which is really cool. Obviously Nossi doing a tremendous job, but we talked about Dean Smith's Dean Smith's Charlotte and what they've been able to do so far this season. I think impressing a lot of pundits. So that's a good test for them against the cream of the crop in the East. So that's one to watch out for as well.
Yeah, lots to touch on there. Just, yeah, going through to start on the West, San Jose, Seattle. I think this is a huge, like, I think they're the bottom two teams in the West right now. So that's a bit of a prove it game for San Jose at home. It's a bit of a prove it game for Seattle, because definitely they both have aspirations of much more this year. So that one's going to be a bit of a fun duel. SKC LA as well, a chance for both teams that have shown good things to prove that they can get off to continue a strong starts. I think SKC as well can do more than they've shown. And as we've seen with the Galaxy, there's potential. Just their back line, it continues to be a big, giant question mark. Although, yeah, I suppose maybe a healthy Jalen Neal. I don't know how far away he is, because he hasn't been playing. I assume he's injured. Maybe that's something where they end up needing him long term. But elsewhere, of course, with Charlotte, Columbus, I just want to say they're a wagon. Like, I think they might be one of the best teams we've ever seen in MLS, just because if you think about it, has there been any team that's been like as good at all positions? Like, they genuinely have probably the best coach in MLS. In goal, Patrick Schulte has been one of the best goalies in MLS since he's come in. At the back, okay, maybe that's one of their lone areas of weakness, but they defend well as a team. Then that you go in midfield, Aiden Morris and Darlington Nagbe. Most teams would kill to have one or two of those guys in their midfield. Up front, like Cucho Hernandez, probably one of the best, if not the best, number nine in the league. Diego Rossi, one of the best supporting pieces. Like, this team was able to lose Zellerayan, and oh yeah, here's Rossi. He fits right into the system just as perfectly. And like, those are just the main pieces, right? Like, there's so many key, like, they have Jason Russell-Rowe in this secondary role where he's already got two goals to start this year. Mo Farsi, of course, we know he's been doing a job at wing back. Like, that Columbus team is an absolute wagon. I'm very curious to see how they do, because We were saying it's scary that they're top of the East and they're still in Champions Cup. Like, that's the thing. That's unheard of to still be balancing continental competition. Well, oh yeah, we're still just cruising through that. They played Tigres next. I think that's going to be a fascinating test. And I think genuinely, I mean, the Whitecaps in Orlando proved to be futile in their attempts to beat Tigres. But that, ultimately, that's a Whitecaps team that game just came way too early for them. And this is an Orlando team that's just sputtered out of the gates to start the year. This Columbus test is gonna, I think, going to be a real sign of, okay, what if they can beat this Tigres team? I think that would send a massive message. Other than that, just a quick note, Minnesota is actually has a bye this week. So if the Whitecaps win, they actually have a chance to go, top of the West, because usually the tiebreaker is wins. It would be tied. It would then go to goal difference. If the Whitecaps win, they should pass Minnesota on that regard. So, hey, something to keep an eye on, that the Whitecaps, because I mentioned earlier, if Minnesota wins, they're actually not in action. So a bit of a chance for the Whitecaps to go top of the West.
Yeah, so that's all good stuff to watch out for this weekend. All right, Alex, final topic of conversation. We'll just touch on it quickly, but it's worth a shout out. Both of the other professional soccer teams in BC in the Canadian Premier League dropping kits for this upcoming season. And man, both of these, I think I'm really looking forward to seeing in person. First, you had the Eagle kit for VFC. For me, I think as much as the kit is tremendous and going to be good to see, it's always a little different. You want to kind of judge it in person on the pitch, but the photo shoot that went along with it for me was the real highlight, especially David Norman Jr. in the red hunter boots and the flat cap it in the farmer's field. That one was good. And then obviously they had the eagle on site and they're shooting in the forest and stuff like that as well. That was just a cool way to launch the kit. And then obviously Pacific working with local Indigenous artists and just producing like truly one of a kind, exceptional stuff. The color palette for Pacific too, like it's really hard to go wrong with those colors. You're always going to produce something that's great. And I mean, as much as I love the kit they did, I guess this was it 2 seasons ago when that first one came out, kind of the black and white Indigenous pattern. This one, I think, even takes it to another level because it really like incorporates the team colors and it feels like a bit of a refinement of that concept. So I just can't wait to see both of these in person in action in the Canadian Premier League this season. I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, where to start? Because they're both wins, right? And that's the thing. Like, I mean, I'll start with Vancouver just because we started with that. Like, just the eagle kit on the back is stunning with the feather, like the way it was feathered. And even just from the front, the black kit with the red logo popping out too. Like, I just thought that was so subtle. It looks clean. The photo shoot was immaculate. Like, it's such a win. And I think the biggest compliment they can get is that there was that fake leak over the weekend that some people took the kit and made it look like a Nigeria kit. And I think that's the biggest compliment that you can say, that your kit gets compared to a Nigeria outfit. So yeah, Vancouver's just hit it out the park with that. I think that's super exciting. And I'm curious to see what their away kit looks like, because that was only the home one. And last year they had their black and red away was among one of the sharpest in the CPL. Very cool with that. So very excited to see what Vancouver FC does, because man, they're going to look good. And for what it's worth, they look great on the field. They signed Moses Dyer this week. He's someone who scored a lot of goals in the CPL before a spell in the USL last year. You know, the big offseason from the likes of Ben Fisk coming in, David Norman Jr., Paris G, like a lot of big signings across the board. Jose Navarro from Liga MX. Like, they're building a decent little squad there in Vancouver. So definitely something when we do our, you know, some CPL preview content, we could talk about how big of a year it could be for them. And as for Pacific, I mean, this might be genuinely one of the best kits in CPL history. And that's saying a lot, because there's been some good ones. Like, for me, the fact that they've somehow taken that kit from 22, which broke the internet, by the way, like it was one of the most popular kits in the world. Such a phenomenal kit. This one for me is better than that one. And that's saying something, because that other one is one of my all time favorites. The white and black with the Indigenous art from local artist Maynard Johnny Jr. He's absolutely cooked again with this one. Like, the salmon, the resilience, like that message of, you know, salmon every year, they fight their way upstream, the resilience, what it meant. Then for me, what they did, like the fact they added a color pop this year with the purple and teal on top of the art was just stunning. So I think that kit deserves a shout because genuinely, that might be a top kit ever in CPL history. And look, shout out to the CPL in terms of the Macron deal, because genuinely this year, there hasn't been a flop for me on in terms of kits. Like Halifax's kits I liked. I liked Cavalry's, the Northern Lights, the green one, and then the red is always solid. Ottawa's I was a fan of. I know those ones are maybe the most controversial, but I liked Ottawa's kits, what they meant, what they represented. The York's as well, I liked them. The chess kit was kind of a fun promotion, the way they went about it. Like they've hit a lot, and I think that's key, because for a league, you can always say like, oh, why you care so much about shirts when all that matters is the teams that wear them. But this sort of stuff matters. Fans want to wear kits. This sort of stuff can be a good way to get known globally. Like people take notice of special kits. Like think of a few years ago when Atlético Mineiro in Brazil dropped that phenomenal 100 years kit. Like everyone talked about it, right? Everyone talked about Pacific's indigenous kit 2 years ago. People are talking about Vancouver's kit. They're talking about Pacific's kit. And I think that's good for the league as well to have these sorts of things go out. So thought that was good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially in the wake of, I don't know, I still have mixed feelings about Canada's new getup. I can't decide whether to get behind it or to reject Nike's continual questionable decisions when it comes to national team kits in particular, and with Nike dropping a bunch of them for different nations, just seeing the varied reactions always fun. But you know, hey, the CPL kits, it's been a strength. Not everything in the league has gone perfectly, but I think it's every year there's been a lot of interesting shirts and more hits than misses for sure.
Yeah, no, hey, hopefully it keeps up, because it's nice after you know, MLS, the amount of time we spent hit or missing on some of those Adidas kits. It's nice to see Macron continue to push the boundaries, because yeah, I'm only excited to imagine what teams can do in the future, right? We're seeing York, for example, this year. Shout out to York, because they also did their contest where they allowed all their fans to submit kits, right? And they ended up selecting a winner for next year's kit. Like, I think it's cool to see that, and I can only imagine what sort of designs continue to be pushed as, you know, the teams lean into their local identities that they're developing over the years. So yeah, exciting times for that stuff, mainly because I love kits. So nice to see close to home some kits make some waves. And hey, maybe there's a scenario where Macron, you should keep an eye on, maybe some sort of Canada deal would be pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Something to watch out for in the near future. Alex, I think that pretty much wraps it up for this episode of the Third Sub. We are looking forward to the Whitecaps against RSL this weekend. Also looking forward to, you know, man, you know, VFC played an exhibition match last night. These teams are ramping up, getting started for, you know, as we talked about right up the top, it feels like football's in the air in BC. So exciting times, and we're going to be with you every step of the way.
Yeah, excited to follow along. And I guess speaking of, you can find me on Twitter and bluesky.alexgongeruzic on Twitter or on Instagram and Threads at @AJRinTheCase. If you've enjoyed the show, make sure to leave a review, leave a like, leave a subscribe, all that good stuff. It means a lot as always. And yeah, excited to inch towards number 200. Some big games here over in BC coming up, and can't wait for all of it.
Yeah, you can find me as always at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter at thethirdsub.ca. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll chat again soon.